Hello, this is Christina Lori, CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative news reporter. Does local news matter to you? CFRC's annual funding drive campaign is now underway through December 31st, and you can help CFRC keep our listeners informed on issues that matter with modernized broadcasting equipment and trained team members. Help CFRC raise $25,000 this year and make your gift today via CFRC.ca. Don't forget to tune in for daily news programming and subscribe to our news podcast to keep up with the latest in your community.
Well, hey there, folks. It's time now for When We Wake. I'm your host, Andrew Shaver, and you've got me for just under an hour. On today's show, I'm talking with Eric Duquette and Jenna Gogo, a.k.a. Duke and Goldie, a duo whose entire story basically starts with a Craigslist ad in Toronto. Jenna put out a call for a guitar player, and perhaps unsurprisingly, a whole host of guys answered it. But it was Eric who fit the bill. The two bonded over a shared love of Motown and Radiohead. They played in a band together, and they fell in love. They fell out of that first band and eventually spun it all into Duke and Goldie. It's been a journey that's taken Jenna from the West Coast to Toronto, Eric from the East to Toronto, and now both of them to Vancouver, where they make their home and, well, where they made their new album, Romance and Ramblin', in the basement bunker at CBC. We get into how all this unfolded, how they write, and how their partnership, musical and otherwise, keeps shaping their sound. Here's my chat with Eric Duquette and Jenna Gogo, Duke and Goldie. Eric, Jenna.
Hey, Andrew.
Welcome to When We Wake.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
I love your hat. That's the Shore Club in Hubbard's, Nova Scotia.
It absolutely is. And full disclosure, it's not my hat. It is Eric's hat.
Okay. All right. Have you been to the Shore Club, Jenna? Because I've seen Eric at the Shore Club. Have you been?
Sadly, I have not yet been. And it feels like it's so overdue, but it will happen one day. I've heard lots of amazing stories. I've seen lots of footage, heck but yeah. I have not yet been.
Okay. Eric, you've been. I think the last time, maybe the only time I've ever seen you in the flesh was at the Shore Club at a Sheepdog show. That was it, right?
That was it. Yeah, that was the time. That was maybe a couple years ago now, but
it was. It was before Ewan moved east. He's a neighbor, basically. He lives up the hill from me right now.
I just heard about that. That's wild. That's excellent. Wow. Well,
everybody's moving east. You guys went west, but
I know.
Everybody's moving east, guys.
You didn't get the memo.
I'm giving you the memo. You're getting it here.
Okay.
but Eric, you're from out east. You're from Moncton. Is that right?
I am. Yeah. I grew up in Moncton. I moved away when I was about 18.
And you moved away. You moved at 18 to Toronto. Where'd you go?
That's right. Yeah.
What was the allure in Toronto at 18?
Well, I think, the main, ostensibly, I was going there to go to school to study music production.
Oh, cool.
I wanted to get into producing but ended up just getting really kind of immersed in the city there. And we met there, actually Jenna and I met there maybe a year into my time there. And Jenna started a weekly music night. We started just like getting up on stage and just like,
oh, cool,
playing songs together, not rehearsed.
Right on.
And the whole thing kind of snowballed from there, actually.
Where were you? Jenna, you're originally from out west, right? You're from the island.
I am, actually. Yeah. I grew up in Victoria.
The big bad city on the island.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. It felt tiny growing up there, but it is the bigger city on the island for sure.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, I live in Dartmouth now, so yeah. Halifax is the big bad city for me.
That's right.
It's all relative.
Totally.
And then so you moved, before you went to Toronto, Jenna, you moved to Montreal. Is that right?
I did, yeah.
I love that city. I spent, you know, 18 years of my life in that city.
Oh, did you?
What were you doing in Montreal?
Well, I was, the first year I was just working and studying French. And then I enrolled at Concordia for their like, film and art history and French programs.
Oh, cool.
But yeah, I was like playing a bit of music and just kind of like working in some of the legendary like bars along Saint Laurent and studying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then you went to Toronto.
I did.
And met the gentleman to your right.
That's right. Yes. I actually posted, I'd moved to Toronto and I wasn't doing much music. And so I posted an ad to Craigslist looking for a guitarist to like jam with. And most of them were like really sweet, like middle-aged dudes, like sending me clips from their YouTube videos and stuff like that. And then there was this like one very like heartfelt, like thoughtful response that really hit on all of the like the notes that I had pointed out. And I was just like,
what were the notes? Well, talk to me about the response Eric sent you.
Well, it was just, I could tell that he really read and like certain influences. And I mean, this is like, we were really young. I was like, I love Radiohead and like Motown and, you know,
what's wrong
like
with Radiohead and Motown?
Oh yeah. There's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with it at all.
Young or not young, you know?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, okay. Totally. So he kind of just like got into like all of the areas that I was like into. And I could just tell he was just like a really thoughtful, reflective person, and we still met at a very public place just in case. You never know on Craigslist, but yeah.
Where'd you meet?
We met at Dark Horse Coffee on Spadina, and I had told him that I was thinking about starting this like live jam night at a wine bar I worked at on College Street.
When you guys first met, was it just about the music? What are your recollections of each other? Because it's fair to say more than just a musical partnership has blossomed from that Craigslist ad, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I will say, like, my first impression of Jenna was I was at the coffee shop. I was waiting for her to get there, and I didn't know what she looked like or anything. So I was just kind of looking to see, like, okay, like, is that her? Okay, no, that's not her.
Right.
They're going to meet someone else. Mm-hmm. It was funny. And then Jenna walked in wearing this like very cool kind of leather jacket and was like looking very stylish. And I was like, whoa, this is like one of those like cool Toronto gals. Like, this is pretty awesome. Okay, great. But I will say it was definitely strictly musical. Like, we were just friends like for like quite a long time.
That's great.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. We were buds for a long time. And we would just get together and like, you know, have like these like very drunken jams, like 20-year-old jams where we just like, I'd bring over like a 6-pack of beer and he'd have like a bottle of whiskey. We would just like eat peanuts and like play music. And then I'd be like, all right, that was fun. See you later.
That's amazing. Like, why even test the waters when you have something so good, you know, that, you know, if it could go bad, you're like, nah, let's not ruin this.
Totally.
That's cool.
Yeah. And I was in a relationship at the time and it was just like, yeah, just like good, true, like pure energy of like friendship.
Love that.
Yeah. I think it was like, you know, a couple of years later that I was like, you know, we're like both like starting to become like 23.
Oh, like, wow, it was really young, hey? No kidding.
We were pretty young.
Yeah.
We actually touch on that in our song that we just released called West End Queen. I'm actually writing about this experience in Toronto, living in the West End, like, you know, the experience of figuring out who you are as a person, like finding yourself as a young person. And like, it's called West End Queen Abattoir. Abattoir meaning slaughterhouse in French. And the song really is about like navigating desires and feelings and feeling like you're not confident or not in touch with yourself enough to really go for what it is that you want to pursue, be it like a romantic relationship or believing in yourself enough to like, you know, pursue what it is that's like pulling you. So it's funny that we're, you know, talking about this because this is like truly what our first single is about.
Tending the bar and singing her heart out. The rent was cheap those days in Montreal. Surviving somehow off a staff price tequila. Nursing hangovers with the PBR. Mopping the floor with the men and their money while all her
Goldie with West End Queen Abattoir off their latest release, Romance and Ramblin'. Eric Duquette and Jenna Gogo, a.k.a. Duke and Goldie, are my guests today on When We Wake. Now back to our chat. What drew you to write about that now?
That's a good question. I think that I was just ruminating on that time and how special it was. I think I was feeling a little homesick for Toronto. And I think that it is really a part of our origin story. And as we've created this project of Duke and Goldie, I thought it would be cool to like to explore that time of like where it all started. And I was just writing just kind of like for fun, as just on the side. I hadn't really had any plans to actually record it. But when we started getting ready for the studio and like seeing like, you know, what other songs we have kicking around, like this was just like a bonus one. We're like, you know, this is a pretty fun song. We should think about bringing it in.
Yeah, it was not planned. Our producer, Eric Nielsen, he was like, do you guys have any other songs? Like, if you've got something else, just like bring it in and we'll just like try it out. And we're like, okay, well, we've got this song. And everyone just got into it and we were all playing live. We had like all the amps kind of separated off into like ISO booths, and everyone was playing the song together and it just took off. It just kind of took on this own energy, and yeah, it's pretty amazing how it all worked out. Actually,
were you doing the vocals live or you're laying the beds and then vocals later?
Actually, the day we went into this, I'd done like a vocal live, but randomly the day we went to the studio, I got like this crazy sinus and like throat infection. So I was it was actually pretty gnarly. I was like, so I was masked up and kind of like trying to be removed, which sucked because trying to get everybody in the studio and get everybody's like availability locked in is like,
that's an ordeal.
It is an ordeal. So I actually was like, you know what, let's do this. Let's get it all down. We'll do like a literal scratch vocal.
Yeah.
And then I was able to go in like a few weeks later and do the overdub, just like a live kind of video.
When you're recording, are you, Eric, I imagine you're playing the electric, and Jen, are you playing the acoustic? Is that what's happening live off the floor?
That's usually what it was. I think this time specifically, I think I played acoustic on this song and Jenna was just singing, because I think we were just going to try to get her vocal. Like if it did have a good vibe to it, I think we might've used it. So we just wanted to have that kind of isolation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's usually how it is. Yeah. Usually I'll be playing the electric and Jenna plays acoustic.
Were those your instruments growing up? The guitar, let's just say, was that where, how did you each begin your musical journey?
For me, it was definitely the guitar. I started playing when I was about 13. My older brother, who's about 6 years older than me, and was playing guitar first, and I just thought he was the coolest guy in the world, and I just wanted to do everything like him. So,
He still is the
and he
coolest
still
guy.
is, yeah.
Yeah, right on, right on.
And yeah, so I just wanted to play so bad. So that's when I started.
Right on.
Eric grew up playing guitar from a pretty young age. There's a really hilarious photo of him at his parents' house. Well, it's very
Yeah,
sweet. And
yeah.
it's like literally him. It's like, I don't know how old you are. Like,
That was when I started playing, probably around like 13 or something.
You're like,
okay.
there's nothing funny about this.
Yeah.
Well,
I was a serious artist.
maybe we'll email you a copy of the photo after
Yeah, actually,
the
I'll use that as the
Yeah.
promo image when I run
Please.
the podcast.
Okay.
Okay.
So it's Eric as like a young boy, like nestling this guitar, like holding it like so gently and tenderly, just like
No.
it's so sweet. And it's framed up at his parents' house, and I
Yeah.
just like die every time I see it.
That's
But
beautiful.
you started singing from a pretty young age.
Yeah, I think I was like singing for a long time. Like my whole family on the West Coast is a very musical family.
Oh, cool.
My grandparents, Theodora and Ken Gogo, they had 7 kids and they're all musical. So growing up, like us as the grandkids, we would show up and there's I think like 6 or 7 pianos in their living room. Like they had a
No kidding.
pump
Like
organ,
actual,
whoa.
like pianos.
Not a keyboard.
No.
Wow. Yeah. Not a little Casio, two octaves.
My grandmother was the organist at the church for 50 years. So she did all of
Wow.
the weddings and funerals that would come through, or like every event
Holy.
that would come through the church. And my grandpa was like this, like, just larger than life, like showboat, hilarious, amazing performer who was just like, just, there were just these amazing people who raised, amazing kids. So we would have the opportunity to like just sing when we'd go over there, like my grandma at the piano, all my cousins doing like, we would do like any song, like we just like bust it out. And I remember all my like little, mostly girl cousins would be like doing the female part. And I'd like to like saddle up to my grandpa and like find like a way to like jump in on the lead, probably just to get more singing time in.
You knew what you needed, and you knew what the audience needed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I did, my grandma like taught me some piano growing up. I have like always had a really terrible time with like my focus. So I would show up and she'd be like, "Have you been practicing?" I'm like, "Well, let's get back into
You're
this."
like, that's why I'm here. We practice
Yeah.
here. I don't practice at home.
Exactly.
That's my time.
Exactly. And then my dad, he's an really incredible singer-songwriter,
Oh, wow.
folk and like country rock musician.
Tell me about your dad.
Yeah, my dad, his name is John Gogo. He toured the like rock and kind of country circuit a lot in the 90s. He was
Wow.
doing his thing. And I mean, he started a his first band was like when he was like 5, called the Baby Beatles. And then like he started writing his own like prog rock stuff
Wow.
in the like in the 80s, and was on the road with his couple of his brothers and a couple more bandmates, and then started doing a solo thing and met my mom, who had already had my older sister from a previous marriage. And then kind of like when my little sister and I were born, he was like, okay, I'm gonna stop touring as much and take care of these kids at home and like do more local gigs. And so, but he's never stopped writing. He's been performing. He just released an album last year. He's got a one-man show on the go.
On the go-go, if you will.
On the go-go. That's right.
Wow. No kidding. How cool.
Yeah, he's pretty amazing. But certainly growing up listening to my dad sing and play guitar, I was like so inspired. And he would teach me some guitar here and there. But I think I was always really intimidated because I would hear these like pro players. I'm like,
Oh,
okay,
I get
that's how
it.
the tone's supposed to sound,
I get it.
and then you pick up a guitar and you're just like, this is not it. This is not
Right.
it.
And is
So
that why when you say he would teach you a few things here and there, I'm like, wow, yeah, I mean, how come just here and there? Is that why? I
yeah,
see.
I think my inner saboteur, as RuPaul would call it, was yeah. strong.
One of them. Yeah.
We all do. And it took me a long time to accept that you just have to suck at guitar for like a couple of years before you can kind of like get into it. So I didn't really get into playing guitar seriously until really playing guitar until I would say like my mid 20s was when I kind of was like, okay, let's just like start playing a bit and accept that it's not going to be as, you know, where it needs to be for a while.
Yeah. I mean, your mid 20s, that coincides with you and Eric starting to play music together, no?
Yeah. And actually, Eric has always like been very encouraging and like, he's like, you know, he's got a very like soft approach. And I think I would say you definitely created space for, it's like, it's okay. Like, that sounds great. He'd be super encouraging. And I'm like, you know what? Okay. I can get through this.
Right. Yeah. I think we had a really cool, our producer, Aaron Goldstein, who produced our first EP, he said this great thing when we went into the studio with him. He said, we seek not for perfection, we seek to feel something.
That's cool.
And we really try to focus on that, you know, because you can get so caught up in the perfection of something, or, you know, but it's not what it's about.
How difficult was it for you, and maybe how difficult does it continue to be, to adhere to that, to seek to not for perfection, but to feel something?
I think it's an ongoing challenge. I mean, I'm sure every artist, musician, person can probably, you know, feels this on some level, but certainly I think I've proven to myself time and time again, if I've had like, you know, a crap day or something like that, and we show up at the rehearsal space and, you know, you're just like not feeling it. It's a good example of like when you, after we've been playing for a while and things like start to warm up and you just like you're here to just like try some new stuff or run the set or do whatever, and feeling how like on a chemical level, on a cellular level, how my mood changes, and like I can just go from like a, you know, to feeling great just through the process of actually just creating something. I think that's kind of the feeling that I strive for, is just to like to feel something and allow for that change to kind of happen.
Just pebbles on.
2023 self-titled debut EP. That is Duke and Goldie with Courage. You're listening to When We Wake. I'm your host, Andrew Shaver, and my guests today are Eric Duquette and Jenna Gogo, a.k.a. Duke and Goldie.
Having now released two EPs, talk about the difference in, or the similarities between the processes of, not, I mean, you can get into the sort of weeds of the technicality of how you're recording the two different albums, but like the feeling behind it, you know, there's something incredible for me. I don't know what it was like for you for your going in to record the first album and, you know, and then release and then hearing it finish and then releasing it and then people like it. And, you know, and for you guys, you had quite a bit of success around that album. And it's a different feeling. It was for me going in to do my sophomore album. Talk to me about that sort of journey for you guys.
I think the first EP, we wrote those songs basically when we started Duke and Goldie. Those are the first songs that we wrote, and we were writing like during the pandemic, and we were actually living on a small island on the West Coast, and we were just like building a garden, going for walks, like it was very nice, and we were very, very fortunate to get to do that. And I think those first songs were very folky. You know, we were very much into like a lot of like kind of 70s folk music, like from the UK and from Canada. And that first album was kind of like capturing those songs. And we recorded that album before we performed live with this band much, really. So after that release came out and we, you know, things got back to normal, we were able to go out and play, and we were playing these songs and it was great. And but part of us was kind of like, it'd be nice if we had some more like kind of like rockin' like tunes that we could play live, you know, and like really let loose. So I think that informed our songwriting at that time. And then when we got into the studio, I think we had the opportunity to have a full band there with us, where the first EP, we did have a band, but it was a lot of the process was us and our producer kind of, you know, adding all the textures and all the colors.
That producer being Aaron Goldstein.
Yeah. 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 He's great.
And like a Swiss Army knife kind of.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, totally. Yeah. So for this one, I mean, we did a lot of it live and we didn't do a lot of overdubs. And so it really captured that kind of live band feeling and, you know, just the fun of like performing live, you know, so.
And what about the expectations you might have that differ between the two, the release of the first and now the release of the second, and what you know, what you're hoping for to happen or what you might be expecting to happen?
Well, that's interesting because I think an interesting point to add to this is that before we started Duke and Goldie, we had a band in Toronto called Blue Sky Miners.
Yes.
And we'd actually had just recorded an EP to release with Blue Sky with Aaron Goldstein as well.
Wow.
And we were getting ready to release that in March 2020. It was like had our, you know, the whole, our release show was booked. Wow. We were in the process of booking a big tour. We were super excited about the record.
Something happened.
Something happened. You know, it like took the wind out of everyone's sails.
I mean, that to put it mildly, that must be gutting.
Yeah, it was, you know, everything screeched to a halt. And I think, I mean, I know we've all kind of talked this to death, but I think we're all still as a collective really processing, you know, the ripple effects of that. So I think when that just stopped, you know, and our band, which we'd been, you know, part of for years at that point, we're like, okay, we'll just put a pin in this and then we'll, you know, as soon as we can tour again, that's when we'll release the record. So, and then of course we moved out west, which we didn't think was going to be, you know, we all kind of like entered into our own projects, and we luckily like started this beautiful thing, Duke and Goldie, that we were so excited about. But I think in terms of expectations, like I think that because of that, like heartbreak from Blue Sky, if for myself at least, it's just been so cathartic to just be releasing things. And I don't know what the expectations, I think like that's certainly how I felt with the first EP. With the second, I think I still kind of carry that feeling of just wanting to like connect with people, and to have the songs out is like, is really the main goal, is like, you know, connecting with more people. I'd love to be, of course, like I get the opportunity to tour it as much as possible, which is, you know, what we're in the midst of doing right now. But yeah, I don't know if you have more thoughts, but I think that's it.
Like, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it never really felt like the stakes were high, I think, which I'm really grateful for. You know, I think maybe we were just so invested in the day-to-day of it and the, you know, writing the songs and then getting into the studio. I think we're just focused on that. It was also where we were, where we recorded. We recorded in the basement of the CBC building in Vancouver. And at Smooth Operator Studios, which is our producer Eric Nielsen's new studio, he was able to take over this kind of like space that was in limbo for a long time. It's like the main CBC Studio One or
Studio Two.
Yeah, one and two. We actually, where they used to record like the orchestra, like back in the day, huge room. I mean, I'm sure it's not this big, but it felt like a football field size, like studio, which is.
And the control desk is 100, and you're like, can you turn down the reverb? He's like, it's natural.
Yeah, so we had this opportunity, but to get down there, you had to like go down these, you know, you had to go down like several floors up, like underground.
Wow.
And I mean, that show Severance came out at that same time, and we were like, it's like a very like Severance-esque experience. Like,
down, like, I thought you were gonna say the show came out, and by the time you came up, it was over.
So it was almost like this sort of like, we almost felt like we were in like a bomb shelter, like making this like underground, and it, you know, it was. It was great. I mean, and I think like Eric was really great at keeping the focus on the music and nothing else, you know?
Wow. What a cool experience. And so the band itself, how many other people came down with you?
So there was five of us. So Eric, who's a great bass player, played bass as well. Sitting at the console playing bass and like kind of tweaking knobs and
I mean, that's amazing. I just did my third album and Danny Ledwell produced, and he was sitting at the Rhodes the whole time.
Amazing.
You know, I tip my hat to those people.
Awesome.
Incredible.
So like talented.
Yeah
So it was us and him, and Leon Power played drums, Scott Smith played pedal steel and a bit of guitar and some dobro, and Daryl Havers played the Hammond B3, this like like the CBC's like Hammond B3 that they've had since the 70s. That's like,
no kidding,
like immaculate
with the shape. Whirling Leslie and everything. Cool. That must have been so exhilarating to be in that musical bunker.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, like, just like you said, like you bring these ideas, like we had these, you know, the songs, the core written, but like to get these total seasoned pros who have all played together quite a bit, like on different projects. So just to have us all in this, like, okay, let's just like focus in on these songs and just like let them breathe and let them kind of go where they will. And it was super exhilarating. And
tell me about another song on the album that went somewhere unexpected.
Well, I think I mean, one that I just, because we were talking about the space, was our song called The Low Desert, which
I was about to ask about that one. I'm so glad you picked that one.
Right,
was the one I was hoping you were going to chat about. I should have just said, talk to me about The Low Desert.
I was
thinking that on my show a few times.
I picked up on something there.
Totally did. Talk to me about The Low Desert. You know, I'll just cut all that out. Hey, talk to me about The Low Desert.
Yeah.
Well, I'm grateful you asked, Andrew. That song was inspired by a road trip down to the Joshua Tree Desert area. Mm. I'm not sure if you've been, if you spent.
I haven't been to Joshua Tree.
Okay. No. Okay. Right on. Well,
kind of luck that sort of thing.
Yeah. It had been on our list for like a long time. There's all kinds of musical lore of like, you know, bands going to that area to go on like spiritual experiences. Sure.
What drugs did you guys take? Just so all of them. There are none left. Okay, got it.
It was actually like a family trip that we took.
Cool.
With our family. And
so Advil was the drug you took.
Advil was the main drug of choice.
Yeah, it was very, it was not like it was back in those days. That's for sure. Right. Yeah, so that's kind of what inspired the song. And so we wanted to kind of recreate this sort of desert expanse, you know, the feeling of, you know, seeing for miles and just being able to like let your imagination, you know, paint a bit of the landscape. So we actually, we went back and forth because there was the big studio one room, which like I felt like was like a football size field. And then there was like a smaller studio two. And we had these two options where we could record in the bigger room, which like sounded very cool, but it was like very open, like very reverby. And then we had the smaller room, which we kind of did like the more upbeat, the kind of like tighter, like punchier rock songs.
Right.
And so Low Desert is a bit of a slower jam. It's a slow build. It's like almost like orchestral feeling and how it kind of builds. And so we decided that would be a good room to record that one in. And we never like imagined where it would go, but we set up like the B3 in this room and it just like, just the natural reverb on it. Like, I think like on the record, like, I don't think there's any effect. It's just the natural room that you hear. And it just like, there was that and the pedal steel and they just like, those two guys just like wove this like incredible tapestry of like sonic dreaminess.
I exist in a polarity, loss only in silhouette. Reaching out to find meaning, part of a whole, where does it go? We were taken by the highway, under the sun, on ancient road. We're fallen angels like you and me, click code to chrome, as mysteries unfold.
from their most recent release, Romance and Rambling. That is Duke and Goldie with The Low Desert. Eric Duquette and Jenna Gogo, a.k.a. Duke and Goldie, are my guests today on When We Wake. And we pick up our chat talking about that tune.
I wrote it as just like on an acoustic guitar. I thought it was like kind of like a folk rock, you know, jam. And it just became this whole other thing.
And you're grateful. You're grateful for that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm kind of just getting chills, actually, kind of thinking about it, because it's like we were talking before, and like you know this feeling, like when a song just like takes on like a new life in the studio, is just like such an amazing, it's so surprising and it's so thrilling.
Mm. Yeah. Go ahead, Jenna. You're in front there.
I think that it was just, it's so neat, because when we were on that road trip, it's like, you know, we were in Joshua Tree and the whole surrounding low desert area. It's like anyone who's been on a road trip anywhere, like you kind of just like, when you have the opportunity to just like look out the window and your mind wanders, and like, just, I find that it's very, what happened in the studio with like that taking up space with this almost like this cosmic sounding like pedal steel, and then like the natural reverb, it's just like the, when you remove yourself from, you're away from home, it's like, it just seems like all these opportunities are unfolding and your creativity and your mind can really wander and like be influenced by new sights and like experiencing nature and experiencing like a different climate and, you know, all the cool, you know, fauna around.
Yeah.
It's like, it's pretty amazing. So it's cool that kind of translated into the song, with like lyrically what we're talking about. It kind of just reflected in the musicality and the musicianship of these like awesome players.
Yeah, talk to me a little bit about the writing process, because the way you just referred to it was that what we're talking in the lyrics, what we were talking about. So it's like a shared, you know, you write these songs together, but how do you guys write these songs? So what talk to me about, man, you could take The Low Desert or maybe Romanticized Cowboy, because there's another one on the album list we haven't talked about. Let's talk about that. How'd you guys write that?
Yeah.
As an example of how you guys write.
I think that predominantly we both will like get into like a groove solo, like writing a lot of the times. So I know that, well, for Romanticized Cowboy, that's a song that I kind of wrote actually over a few years. I would kind of like flip back through my notebook and find that song and kind of like get into this world where I was writing about kind of like, well, Romanticized Cowboy is about, like, for me, is about falling in love with like the fantasy of someone.
Sure.
And like the, just this, like the lore of the cowboy, the like the world in which, you know, I certainly grew up in, like, you know, being sold this idea of like some like white knight coming, or like, you know, to like aspire to this like relationship or this like this person, and also like kind of like the those feelings you put in yourself too. It's like, so I got really into this, you know, I'd like write a few you know, lines and like, or paragraphs, and then I would kind of come back to it as more of a poem. And then I remember, like, for that particular song, I remember Eric coming home late one night from work, and I was kind of still awake, and then he was like going to bed, and he's like, or what are you up to? I'm like, well, I'm working on this song, would you want to, like, I'm like, oh, let me just sing it to you. And I started singing it to you. He grabs the guitar.
So you're singing a cappella in that moment?
I was, yeah. Uh-huh. So yeah, for me, oftentimes I'll get like a melody in my head, and because that's how I started writing, but I think that like oftentimes I will get this melody and he'll be like, here. And I'm like, no, try this. Like, that's not quite the right chord. Like, try this. I'm like, no, this is the note. Like, let's find like the exact, even if it's on the chord.
Right.
We do a lot of playing around like that.
Yeah.
And when you're writing, Eric, are you writing generally with a guitar? Like, are you writing the sort of melody along with a guitar chord structure?
I'd say most of the time that's how it works. Yeah. Sometimes I'll get a melody that'll just kind of come to me and I'll sing it into my phone. But the next thing that I do is always go to the guitar to kind of work it out.
I was just chatting with my pal Jill Barber about her new Christmas album, and she wrote all those, well, there's a couple original compositions on it. She wrote them a cappella, because she's found that, at least with these two, that, and I wondered, Jenna, how you'd respond to this, because I get it from her. I'm like, yeah, I'm with you on that. She finds the guitar a little limiting. She doesn't, what she said was that her guitar skills aren't strong enough, that she ends up feeling like she's writing the same thing over and over. And man, yeah. I'm at that point now.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's, I grew up spending so much time, like, just singing and, like, finding weird harmonies. And that was kind of, like, my thing that I became obsessed with. And so as somebody who's, like, you know, taking on guitar, like, you know, later in life, is like, I have written songs like that where I'll start, you know, like our song Courage was like that, or like a few other things where I'm like, you know, songs we haven't released or, you know, that are like just playing around with some chords. But yeah, I'm not, my skills do kind of put me in a box in a way where, if I find like something's inspiring, I can kind of find it like, I need to put the guitar down sometimes and like just kind of go off where I'm compelled to take my voice. So it's like where my voice is going to be resonating where I want it to, or where it's going to like be like kind of humming along, you know?
Yeah. And sometimes your hands on a guitar aren't creating that space.
Yeah. And I've had it happen a few times where I've been ruminating on an idea and some like, the melody and the lyrics come to me like pretty quickly, and I just start, so that's when I grab my voice notes, and I'm just like, I've had it a few times where I've sung like entire songs like in their entirety,
that's incredible,
and where, wow, it's like the it's like a poem but also comes with this like melody that I just seem to be like channeling. It's only happened a few times. That was like with our song See You There on our first EP, but that's, I think that's a good example of like when in an ideal world, that would be like how I write a lot of my stuff.
Could you access that voice note for See You There right now?
I probably could.
You can straight up say no.
I actually could. I think it might take me like 30 seconds to pull it up. I think this might be it. Here it is. Oh yeah.
It's called The Writing of See You There. That's great.
The Writing of See You There.
Seems planned.
Yeah.
But it's not.
So maybe May 4th, 2021. My phone's also, let me see if it'll play. Let me see it. Okay, hold on a second. I should say, I was in the, so just, I don't know if you want to include this, but just FYI, my friends had reached out to me from Toronto. We were, it was early days living on this like little island that we were kind of camped out on. And they had said they were raising funds for this women's shelter in Toronto. And if we wanted to like contribute something. So like it's due tomorrow. So originally I was like, maybe I'll just like submit like a Blue Sky Miner song that would be, you know, thematically appropriate. But I was like, you know, I don't know. I was just thinking about it. And so I was actually doing laundry and up in the adjoining like bathroom, which has all the laundry apparatus. And so you can hear the going in the background. But anyways, this is the voice note.
And I know you hate you, and so young. The wind blows a solidity out to you.
In the sun, I wanna hold your hand, let go to run, and the plants are young. The wind, she pours a salinity base. I grew up barefoot on the Pony Coast, but scars are relative and orbital. We feel in patterns and live in the bays, deep diving indigo with fraying nails. Respect the textures of your tumbling hair. You deserve
From Duke and Goldie's 2023 debut self-titled EP, that is a beautiful tune called See You There, written in almost its entirety, sung a cappella into Jenna Gogo's phone before it was fleshed out with her partner, Eric Duquette. Eric and Jenna are my guests on today's episode of When We Wake. Now back to the conclusion of my chat with Eric and Jenna, Duke and Goldie.
Where did the lyrics come from? That's beautiful. Where did the lyrics come from to be able to sing start to finish in a complete song in a voice note?
So I think that what happened was most of it was there. And then I think I like added a few things here and there. We sat down and recorded it that day.
Wow.
I think what was happening was we'd been building this garden. And we were learning all these really cool, like, kind of hippie types live on this island. And there was this one woman, Jane Teske, who is like this master gardener and who we would see out on our, like, you know, socially distanced walks, but I could like kind of pick her brain about how to build soil. And I think I was ruminating on like, so I was like, we were literally, you know, getting compost and doing it all from like scratch. And I think I was thinking about like how we're all super connected, how all the plants are so connected and how there's like this mycelium network. And I was learning about that. I think I was just kind of thinking about how there's all these women that are end up at, like all the women's shelters were like really filling up. A lot of the shelters in general were filling up. It's like, you know, people were getting desperate. And I was thinking about how lucky and privileged we were to have a safe place to go, considering the industries we work in were like completely shut down. And I was thinking about how like we're all that, you know, shelter should be a human right. We should take care of each other as community members. It's like we're all so much closer to being in that position ourselves, and I think we would like to admit of needing that support and that help. And I think I was just kind of ruminating on how we're all